In the dark, I play my dream. Permaculture flows like sweet streams. I'm the daddy with the know-how seed. Creating the world like it's meant to be. Permaculture, B-I-O-V, I'm the king. Back to love in everything. Bring a change, making it last.
Welcome to episode 318 of the Permaculture Pimp Cast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is my passion. The only pimp cast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture preparedness and practical living. Oh, yeah. I want to thank everybody for coming in tonight. We know you got lots of things you could do on a Monday, but here you are with us. So thank you very, very much. All righty. So this episode, as always, brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com.
Turn that simp into a pimp.
Bam! Living Soil Foundation, folks, we are going to make history. And I talked about it in the last program, and I'll just kind of touch on it just a little bit. Our preliminary tests are showing that we have crossed the finish line, and we are bringing in the environmental engineers to confirm that. Because unlike everybody else out there that seems to be in this space around here, A, we're the only ones that have done testing. B, I think we're the only ones that have results. So... yeah, there's a lot of people fancying themselves as being able to do this work, and it's not a prideful thing. It's just really the biggest thing is so many of you people out there have given some of you a lot of money, and some of you it was a lot of money to you, and I want to show results. I want to be able to show you with all the swindlers and hucksters and carpetbaggers and all the people that have rolled in here doing some pretty awful things. It feels really good to know that, man, I got something to show. I got honest, cool, awesome results that I can show with your donations. So it shows you that we actually do with the money. In fact, every dime of it, every single penny, not like, feed the children where, you know, maybe 50% or not even that much, maybe, I don't know, 30% actually goes to the cause. Well, 100% is going there, and I'm volunteering my time, expertise. And so many others have volunteered a lot, too. I want to give a shout out once again to Dr. Will and Pat Miletich. There's too many out there to thank. I mean, it's too early to take a bow just yet. But, folks, I want to tell you that we have, at least with the scalar testing, we've already crossed the finish line. And so the environmental engineers will be out just after Memorial Day, I'm told. That's the earliest I can get them in here. And hopefully their lab testing is almost certainly going to prove that we've crossed the finish line. And just so you know, we did a control on that site. Son, I'm not even sure I told you this, but the water, the river that's rolling through there is the French Broad River, and it is absolutely still with the testing. It is off the charts polluted. In fact, a foot up the bank, it is absolutely positively polluted to the point that even the locals there haven't seen any fish at all when they used to. So that's number one. And then every other site around there that was tested has come up dirty as all get out. When I say dirty, folks, I'm talking like some of the worst things in the world. You don't want your kids playing in this at all. So anyway, we're moving the needle in a big way, and I can't thank you guys enough. I want to thank everybody in the chat right now. If you would, hit that thumbs up. Tell everybody we're live. So let's see here. Jane, Juby, Joe. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm doing the best I can on the volume. I don't know that we could turn it up any more than that. It's just kind of I'm maxed out on my end. So we're doing what we can. Want to give a shout out, as always, to Renewed Homestead. Go check out their YouTube channel. You're going to be glad you did. Guess you guys are having some power outages over in that part of Burnsville.
Are you guys getting storms over there?
We're getting a little bit of, not a little bit, we're getting pretty steady rain all day long, but that's not the most astonishing part, son. And you'll know this. I mean, the queerest thing that's happening on this day has nothing at all to do with the weather. It has to do with your mom's disposition, because normally when it's raining and it's cloudy out and it's nasty, she is I'm not going to say she's nasty, but she's just not in the best mood. But today marks the first day, she said, in a while where she felt like she had some energy. And I'm feeling the same way, too, because a lot of crazy things. And I'm curious if anybody in the chat has felt this, too, because there's a channel out there called Into Thin Air, in the number two, Into Thin Air. And they have a Twitter or X channel. I found out about them a while ago, and boy, they report some stuff that's going on that nobody else is reporting. And one of the things I think they focus on is what's happening with the NexRad radar towers. And he's correlated all the people that are having these weird episodes, whether in terms of their emotions or their inability to sleep, they seem to coincide with the activity that they happen to be doing with these NexRad radar towers. And I've noticed it right here. So when I came across this channel, and he was promoted by Stu Peters and a number of others, I was like, okay, let me take a second look at this guy. And it was funny. I was going back looking at his, I was like, man, I couldn't sleep worth a hoot last night. And then get over here, check out his thing. And then bam, every night, 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm waking up. And then like last night, I bet I woke up 5 times. I could not go back to sleep, but somehow today I seem to have some energy. I don't understand it. I don't know what's going on. I know some strange, weird, crazy, unbelievable things were going on. We had a few days without obvious chemtrails. They're chemtrailing all the time. They're doing it at night. And then, of course, right before this big storm, what do we have? Chemtrails everywhere. So, son, I got to ask you, since you're out in Texas, a friend of mine sent a video that apparently all over Texas and the Deep South, there's a lot of places that are getting hit with blue rain.
Well, I was out of town during the, like, a lot of the rain events. I haven't seen anything with blue rain, but I did notice that there were some like flooding issues. I was out at that Midwest Preparedness Conference in Kansas, which is why my voice is shot right now. But yeah, when I came back through, I noticed that there was a lot of, like, all the rivers are high. The Red River is high. There's still puddles outside. I didn't notice any blue puddles, but I honestly wouldn't be surprised. I mean, they've been spraying constantly out here. There hasn't been, like, a solid blue day out here in, shoot, as long as I can have, like, in recent memory. Yeah, I don't know what it'd be caused by, but it could be somebody up in the sky taking methylene blue.
Well, maybe that wouldn't be the end of the world if that was the case, but maybe they're taking methylene blue and peeing on us. I mean, that would be an improvement. So dude was asking who felt the earthquake in Tennessee. My neighbors did next door. I'll be honest with you here. People were claiming they felt it all over Western North Carolina. I didn't feel anything. Some people, I was in a meeting yesterday in Asheville, had to go into the den of darkness over there, went in there, and some people reported that they felt it. But, you know, hey, William, I can't help but remember the interview I did a while back with Jason Trent, the insurance adjuster, not adjuster, but the insurance guy. Yep. I almost made a short out of the interview. Folks, if you haven't seen that interview, you might listen to this, like, I guess you can call it a tactical nuke of information that he dropped at the end of that podcast. And I'll just give it to you right now. I'm going to dig it up and probably make a short out of it. But it was bizarre because at the end of it, he's like, okay, I don't remember what prompted the questioning, but he ended up saying, well, I would highly advise folks to start getting earthquake insurance. And I'm like, what? Yeah. So... and he said that, and I'm thinking, okay, well, these insurance actuaries, they know things that other people don't. They are solid when it comes to their predictions because they base them on real things. Well, Jason made that prediction. I texted him actually today, and I said, boy, you're looking like Nostradamus over all this. Strangely, he didn't respond to that. He did respond to something else, I have to tell you privately, but he was the first one I thought of when I heard earthquake here in Western North Carolina. And I'm thinking, okay, well, a while back we did wind up getting an earthquake. Well, let me just back this up, folks, just so you know how sleazy these insurance companies are. So we had Travelers Insurance, and we had the same insurance that the Biltmore Hotel in Asheville has. Okay. So it's the best insurance you can have. We were insuring our farm that way. Well, that hurricane came through. And Jason helped me work out because they walked through and said, okay, yeah, you got damage here. Yeah, we'll get you a new roof, new walls, new floor, the whole nine yards. They made all these statements saying they were going to do all this stuff. And then next thing I know, I get an email saying, oh, by the way, my bad. We're not actually going to pay for anything. And so that's when Jason got involved and then, you know, got a roof out of the deal. So I'm not going to complain about that. Okay, so here's the sleazy thing they did. They canceled us and didn't even tell us. Your mom found out the hard way. They canceled our insurance. I mean, they basically dropped us after they paid it out and didn't even tell us. So here we were, I guess, I don't know, a month or two without insurance, not even knowing that we didn't have it. Surprised. Anyway, ended up getting new insurance, even, I guess, better insurance. And also, I told your mom, I said, hey, based on what Jason said, I'll tell you what, just go ahead and throw that earthquake insurance in there as well. So that's exactly what we did. So people might have scoffed at what he said there, but it wouldn't shock me. I mean, tonight's a full moon, so most earthquakes happen plus or minus 10 days around a full moon, or not 5 days or so. Where can't remember what the number was exactly, but I want to say maybe plus or minus 5 days around a full moon. So maybe these sheep will actually have, I'll probably look at baby lambs sitting on the ground tomorrow since it's going to be a full moon. But it wouldn't shock me if another earthquake happens. And honestly, the new Madrid wouldn't even shock me at this point. I mean, things are getting crazier and crazier by the day. And so anyway, man, that was a rabbit hole I didn't intend to go down, but we'll just jump right into farm news. So for the folks that were asking, yeah, we got more bone sauce and comfrey in stock. We got some rice knives, got all that stuff squared away, and I'm glad I got it done right before this rain because obviously I can't make bone sauce in the rain. Everything's got to be perfect. The weather's got to be perfect. No high fire danger, any of that stuff. Right. So, and I tell you what's really been strange over the last few days, and I'm wondering if Renewed Homestead has been feeling it over there in Burnsville and other people that are listening in Western North Carolina or maybe where you live. But, man, it's just been unbelievably weird and chilly. It's just been weird and chilly in the mornings around here. And like today, it's like I couldn't get warm all day long. Just weird. I don't know what's going on. It's just some weird thing that's going on. It's been happening over the last several days. So couldn't believe it's May, for crying out loud, it's May and I'm still out here wearing a sweatshirt. So it is what it is. But I will say that we did manage to get past the last frost date, notwithstanding something weird unfolding. And these trees and bushes and everything else are absolutely positively loaded. I mean, all of them. Like, on a level that I haven't seen before. Like, you name it, name the berry, we got it. Name the tree, we got it. All of them have fruit sets on them that are just unbelievable. So we got past the last frost date, so we look like, you know, Lord willing, I mean, we ought to have a bumper crop of everything. And folks, remember, when you set up your orchards, maybe William could talk about this a little bit. When you set up your orchards, your food forests and stuff like that, hey, number one, don't put all of, I don't care how much you love an Evercrisp apple. Nobody loves them more than I do, but don't just grow Evercrisp apples. We want to grow things that are early, mid, and late season, no matter the cultivar. So I want an early apple, mid apple, and late apple. So if you do get those weird frosts or late frosts or whatever the case may be, well, you don't lose everything. So right. Anything you want to add to that?
Well, on that same kind of topic, I like the way that Stefan Sapkowiak sets up his U-Pick orchard where each row is in harvest roughly at the same time. So that way, like if you have people over to harvest, you can just tell them, hey, go down this row. Everything that you see there is basically ready to harvest. I thought that was a pretty neat idea. It does take quite a bit of planning on the front end, but I mean, with like modern technology and everything like that, makes it fairly easy to organize and all that stuff. But yeah, also adding diversity protects you from any pests that may come in. Because if you have all Evercrisp apples and let's say cedar rust starts bothering you that year for whatever reason, then you don't have Evercrisp apples anymore. you have no harvest. But if you have a diversity, well, mulberries don't care about cedar rust. You'll still have a mulberry harvest until you have time to take care of that cedar rust.
Well, then also remember, this is Permaculture Preparedness and Practical Living on this podcast. Yeah. Can I add any more peas in there? And that's another thing is your preparedness. I mean, if all you had is that one cultivar, ask Granddad's Orchard what happened to them. They had a late frost, and the Evercrisp, which is probably the most popular apple they have there, they lost all of them. There was a year they didn't have anything, and that was their biggest moneymaker. Honestly, when you ask, well, when me and Ben and Denise and your mom go to a orchard, honestly, 9 times out of 10, yeah, we're there to pick up apples, but me and Ben are there to get the apple slushies, apple fritters, apple cake, popcorn apple, apple a la mode, apple. I mean, me and Ben, we got equal sweet tooths there, man. We leave out there just absolutely drunk on apples. So I think Ben's got a worse sweet tooth than mine, but I mean, you name it on that thing, apple donuts. I mean, you name it. I guess I'm like the Bubba Gump of apples, but yeah, but it's always a good, joyous time to actually, it's always a wonderful time to go to an orchard, but that's what you run into. So there's that preparedness quotient that we bake into everything in the permaculture, the way William and I do it.
Yeah.
Because honestly, it's adding a level of redundancy that otherwise you're never going to see in an apple orchard. So if you have early, mid, and late peaches, early, mid, and late apples, early, mid, and late pears, early, mid, and late berries, you're always going to have something. It may not be the bumper crop of everything like we're expecting this year. Or like William said, okay, a pest knocks something out. Well, he didn't get them all. So think about those. That's a level of redundancy that we always bake into the cake. So hopefully I'll be able to show you that before long.
Another aspect of it is that you don't have to deal with the entirety of your harvest all at once either. Kind of spreads that out a little bit so you can deal with it in chunks as opposed to, oh crap, all 120 of my apple trees are all ready to pick at the same time. Now you can do like blocks of like 40 or so.
Yeah, that's exactly. A harvest is hard enough. It is hard enough just trying to get that, especially when like tomatoes, perfect example. I mean, you got your tomatoes and they're coming through and man, it seems like they all come at the same time. And then you're like, oh man, what am I going to do with all these guys? And then, you know, it's just that time of year. There's several times a year where you just don't sleep much. And harvest time is one of those times, because if you want it, I mean, if you want the very, very best, like I can't eat store-bought tomato sauce. I mean, when you make your own, folks, and it's made exactly with all the fresh, because the tomatoes are coming in at the same time as the basil, then you add the onions, and then, of course, the peppers are coming in that same time. Well, what do you make tomato sauce out of? All those things. I mean, and when it's ready to rock and roll, in fact, we got a freezers full of tomatoes. I still haven't even harvested from last year, but that's another cool tactic too, is you can take your tomatoes instead of having to blanch them. You can stick them in the freezer, let them thaw out. And then I think I like that method best. Your mom started doing it that way. And I think I like it best that way, because when you blanch it, that's more water I got to cook off to make the doggone sauce. So I think we actually used up our last jar. So I'm going to have to get hot and heavy on getting that done. So other things to think about there, y'all. So planting comfrey here's another little thing, and then I'm going to kick it over to you because I know you get a lot to add here. Here's another little thing I'm doing, folks, and you might want to give it a try as well. So out in the pasture, our pastures have never, ever, ever looked this good. In fact, when we came here, it was a thorny, thickety, nasty mess, and now they have hit their stride. In fact, I was planning on harvesting some sheep, and now I'm thinking, okay, I don't have enough stock to keep up. In fact, last year I was already there because I'd have to go behind them and weed eat just to try to keep up with the growth out there. Now we have grass that's up to my chest. It's fantastic. They're stomping it down. I'm going to try to do a Patreon video, maybe a little YouTube short of showing exactly how that looks. And it looks fantastic. So I said all that to say this: you're always going to have parts in your pasture that just don't come along as fast as others. So one of the little methods I'm doing right now is planting comfrey in the spots where I don't have anything growing. So just like William and I were talking about a moment ago, when it comes to redundancy, remember that comfrey is a dynamic accumulator. I mean, so many, I'll have William kick them off here in a minute, but the point that I'm making here is instead of me harvesting comfrey from some other place and then bringing it over there and giving it to the sheep or the chickens or pigs or whatever the case may be, why not just have it already grown right there in the paddock? So all the spots that might be bare, not bare, bare, because there's always something down here, but the spots that aren't coming along, I'm planting comfrey in those areas to get them really off and running and kicking in a big way. Plus, the medicine's right there in the paddock. I mean, if I have the comfrey out there, I mean, it's producing bee. I mean, they'll harvest of it what they want. But if it's sit there in the paddock, I don't have to go out there and take it out, man. They can just partake however they want. So that's exactly one of the things I'm doing right now. What are some of the other benefits of doing something like that, son?
You're also, like, if you have a really bare spot, if you can get anything to grow in that spot, like comfrey would, comfrey does well in crappy soil. And in fact, I think it does slightly better in crappy soil, but it'll start feeding the organisms. So you're changing the soil biology and making it like a more inhabitable environment for your other like late successional grasses and stuff like that, which is what you want if you're grazing. Now, Matt Wood, I just saw in the comment asking, is there a good way to control those yellow buttercup flowers, if you know what I'm talking about? In fact, I was just at a property yesterday on the way back home. He had actually like 4-year before and after photos, and just with responsible grazing, just with like properly grazing his sheep and his cows, he had a field of yellow buttercup flowers, and now it's completely different. It's about waist-high grass, and he's been able to increase his stocking density and all that type of stuff just by grazing correctly. But you have to change the soil biology. Now, a lot of people, when I do consultations, a lot of people are upset about like not being able to fit their intended like stocking density at first. They're like, okay, they have pictured a field full of cows, like a whole bunch of cows, or maybe like a whole bunch of sheep and stuff like that. And it's a good idea to start off small, especially if you have crappy pastures. Start off small, have those guys graze around, and then as you graze correctly, your forage density is going to increase. And as it increases, you're going to have to increase your stocking density like Dad is right now.
Yeah, and I'm in a bind, actually. I'm really, really, really trying not to knock. Before, in the past, depending on what model you're using, and this is what I use Patreon for, to kind of go into greater detail on these things, because honestly, most people on YouTube just really couldn't care less about that sort of thing. So if you're down to the nuts and bolts and stuff, and where you really want to go into a PhD understanding of some of this stuff, that's where I cover it on, Patreon. But yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, the stocking density, I don't have enough animals right now. And, supposedly these girls are pregnant, but boy, they sure aren't acting like it, man. Because honestly, the gestation period of a sheep is 4.5 months. But boy, I mean, I don't know exactly when the ram got busy, but man, it's got to be any day now. I've been saying that for over a month. Yeah. But, they're filling up with milk and the whole 9 yards. So hopefully we got some good moms out here. And yeah, you're exactly right. It gets to the point, if you can just be patient, and if you don't get out in front of your skis too much, you will have to increase your stocking density. So ordinarily, you'll have them kicking, you'll have a high density, let's say this time of year. And then when you get in late summer, early fall, that's when you want to be thinking about, okay, which animals need to go? And those are the ones you're going to put in the freezer. And, based on some of the stuff I've been learning from Jack Cruz here lately, boy, man, good thing I love raising sheep, man, because boy, they are some of the best in the world, best in things in the world to eat in terms of meat. Not only because they taste good, honestly, it's my favorite meat, but there's a whole lot going on there. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, or we're going to be, this podcast will be 2 hours long. But anyway, son, you just got back from a trip today, and man, I couldn't be more proud of you, man. So many people Midwest Preparedness Conference, man, they sent some really awesome messages about you, and people were just really elated with the wonderful job you did. So, but apparently you were on your bicycle the whole time.
Yes, I was. Yeah. I was teaching at the Midwest Preparedness Conference. The first day, well, it was actually all week, but the classes didn't start till Thursday and then went on to Friday and then Saturday. We can answer this question real quick. So would you pull out some of the buttercups and replace with comfrey here and there? No, I wouldn't pull out any of the buttercups because they're still feeding the microbes, just graze over the top of them. And as the soil biology changes, then the buttercups will, they just won't be welcome to grow in that soil anymore. And some of your native grasses will start taking over. So if you had a bare spot, then yeah, fill that with comfrey, or like a barer spot than the rest surrounding area, then fill it with comfrey. But as far as Midwest preparedness, yeah, I was on my bike. The first day I taught a sheep processing class, which we had to shoot off-site and then bleed off-site, and then we brought it back on to, because it's Army Corps of Engineers campground. It was over in Clinton Lake in Kansas. And if you missed it, y'all, and you, if you didn't know about it, I put it in every single video leading up to it. So I don't know what to tell you. Watch more of my videos or Dad's videos. But yeah, did the sheep the first day. And then on Friday is when Joel showed up, because Thursday he was teaching over at Holton High School in Kansas. That's a different story, though. But Friday we did the composting class, taught them a basic hot composting method. And then I think the more valuable part of those composting classes is just talking people through some of their troubleshooting on their compost, because most people are attempting compost. And what I've noticed is that most people will attempt it and then they won't get it right the first time, and then they'll just kind of put it off to the side and then quit. But we're able to kind of talk through some of those problems, and I think there's going to be a lot more people making compost now, which is fantastic. But we added the sheep organs to the hot compost pile that was already prepared and built. And then Friday we did like a after actions report of Hurricane Helene, which was, yeah, awesome. Awesome being at Midwest Preparedness Conference, being able to like talk about that topic specifically, because I know I'm not filtered in any kind of way. I can say, I can be as frank about the land grab going up, on up in North Carolina and the contamination as I want, and nobody's even looking at me crazy. Pretty much everybody was like, oh, yeah, that checks out. You mean the government's trying to kill us? That checks out. But yeah, it was an awesome festival. It was camping. My baby is different now. She like demands to be outside running around all the time now. Like, she needs access to her rocks and her sticks, and she loved all the animals that people brought out, all the puppies. Yeah, she was thriving at the campground. She's like, you mean we get to stay out all day and all night? Yeah, she loved it. Took up all of the air mattress.
Of course. Yep. Yeah, I remember when you were a baby, you'd lay sideways and, you know, no room for nobody else. And I was like, how does this even happen, man? So, yeah, I'm glad my little sweetie out there just had a great time. So, yeah, no weird stuff going on out there. I mean, that's a really awesome, I mean, I don't care what the Fed's rules are, man, but that if you want to go to a conference, man, you know everybody's armed at that one. So, you know, I don't care what the rules are.
Wink, wink. There were rules saying that you had to have even if you had a concealed carry permit, you had to get an additional permit to be on that property. I'm just going to leave it at that. But we were supposed to have an additional permit.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I just don't obey unjust laws. So, I mean, at the end, you know, when you get down to brass tacks on a lot of this stuff, son, it's just cool. I love being in an environment like at Mountain Readiness, man. Shoot, I know I wasn't the only one armed, and nobody is tripping in a place like that. And that was it's funny because I just left Mountain Readiness, had a great time out there. Want to give a hat tip to T and the gang over there, Mountain Readiness folks. If you didn't go, like William, man, you missed the best thing this side of the Mississippi. And you missed a lot of awesome training. You missed, you know, just hanging out in a room with, you know, legends like Sue LaRue, man. The guy was a Green Beret and joined the Foreign Legion. And he's honestly one of the funniest dudes you'll ever meet. And just wicked smart, you know, just incredibly smart, everything about the Constitution, you name it. So it's just, it's just a real joy to be able to do these things. I wish I could do them more, but honestly, my work with Living Soil Foundation is really starting to kind of monopolize a fair amount of my time, because now that we're at the precipice of showing the whole world that, hey, we can clean up so-called forever chemicals, that we can clean up all these things. Well, I got to make sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, because nobody asks the government or these newspapers saying, when they said it was all clear, nobody asked for their results. But when we said it wasn't, they wanted to ask for my results. I mean, that just sounds backwards. Yeah. And then, you know, you have on the flip side of this, when I'm saying, hey, we got this area that's all clear, I guarantee everybody's going to say, well, where's your results? Well, we're going to have them for you. And in fact, I told one person, and the first thing out of her mouth was, well, do you have a report of this? I'm like, how many people asked Mountain True where their report was? How many people asked the newspaper where their report was? So, you know, I just know that that's just going to be because here's what I don't get. People will come down like a ton of bricks on somebody who doesn't have a history of dishonesty. But the people who are profligate liars, absolute profligate liars, nobody asks, well, hey, can you provide that? I mean, they lied to us. I've said it before. I mean, they could tell me the sun's rising in the east and I would honestly go out and check. Everything they tell me, I do the very opposite. And I mean everything. So maybe there's a lesson in all that. So let's see here, son. You may have to read this because it's Denise put up something from Rumble here.
Jen from Everett, Washington. I've had all kinds of advice for my climate. What is the best time to transplant tomatoes and should I fertilize them? Oh, man. That's a pretty broad question. I always recommend downloading, I mean, not having prepared for your area at all. When reading this question, I would download the app called Garden 8. It's Garden, A-T-E, all one word. And it takes the guesswork out of all of that. I've noticed that for my climate here, it's maybe a week off the timing and everything. But if you followed it to a T, you're still going to have like fantastic harvest and everything. So yeah, check out the app Gardenate. It was the app that Jeff Lawton told me to download while I was studying under him in Zaytuna Farm in Australia. Like, it's Jeff Lawton approved app. He said, if you're serious about gardening, you need to download this app. So yeah, Gardenate, A-T-E. It is an Australian design app, so some of the names for the vegetables are going to be slightly different in fruits as well. Like, instead of watermelon, they say like rock melon. Instead of like zucchini, they say courgettes or something. Instead of peppers, they say capsicums, which all apply. It's just they use different words for, you know, than what we use here. So I would download that app.
You may have to overload it with ChatGPT to make a little translation from time to time. So yeah,
you should be able to tell based off the photo, though.
Yeah, some folks may not, but yeah, definitely check that app out. I got it too. There's a lot of cool stuff out there. This is where, you know, this is where I got this love-hate relationship with technology, because this is one of those examples where, I mean, it's like George Washington said about government: it's either a dangerous servant or a fearful master. And it all comes down to how you use it. So, I mean, and speaking of stuff like that, I'm doing more and more and more to, notwithstanding, you know, the times I'm in front of this EMF-filled studio right now, you know, where I got computers around me, I got lights, I got obviously a sign behind me, the whole nine yards, I'm doing the best I can to try to, if I am using the phone, I'm trying to be very cautious that I'm using it while I'm outside in, because this thing, I mean, your phones are all blue light, okay? Unless you have something like this where I can't even tell you what it is. Okay, that's my grandbaby, but it's all blue light. And under that blue light, think about it, you only get blue light when it's midday. But they designed, this is where the work of Dr. Jack Cruz is fantastic. And a number of others, too, are starting to get on board, where all these computers, except for the daylight computer, they designed them to give off nothing but blue light. Well, and then we wonder why we can't sleep at night when, okay, all these bulbs in your house, take it from me, a journeyman electrician with almost 30 years experience, okay? All those lights, those compact fluorescents or the LEDs that you have everywhere, unless you change them out like I have and put in full spectrum bulbs, you're getting nothing but blue light. So that's a problem. So I'm doing the best I can. Even though I may use apps from time to time, I'm trying to become more and more and more of a Luddite every day. Spend as much time grounding as I can. I even got little straps on my shoes now where I'm grounded 24/7 if I can, if I'm outside. And then walking around as barefoot as I possibly can. Now, that can be troublesome when you do farm work. So especially when you're walking up these kinds of mountains, you got to have some grip on your shoes or you're just going to, you know, I'm getting old enough where I might start breaking a hip. So I got to be really careful out there. So
you better start digging those toes in.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. Those mountains. Yeah, you better be a hobbit or something walking around these mountains. All right, so son, is there anything else you wanted to add regarding your little excursion out there to Kansas?
I might be fixing some of Joel Salatin's soils on his rental properties. That's exciting. I mean, it's not official yet or anything like that, but he liked the compost talk that I gave. Before he left, I was talking to him, saying like, "Hey, if you need believe it or not, I'm offering him help. Saying like, if there's anything I can help you with at any point, like, feel free to reach out," and gave him a card. And he's like, "Actually, yeah, I would like you to come out and fix some of our rental property soils." Cause they were saying that, yeah, I mean, they're making progress grazing correctly out there. You're going to make progress grazing correctly, but having a further understanding of compost now, he was like, "Okay, if these are things that we can do even at a faster rate, then I want you to come out here and do it." So he's going to talk to Daniel Salatin, his son. And then they're going to get back to me and see if they want me to come out. And I told him I'd do it for free. And here's the deal I made him. I said, if I come out there and I do it and it's crap, you tell everybody. But if it works, you also tell everybody. So, yeah, that's the deal I made him.
Man, that's what I'm talking about. Those are the kind of deals, folks. Those are some of the kind of deals you work when you're up and coming and you're doing certain things, you know. There was a time where when you would go into an apprenticeship, you did it on the basis. And this is what I think this is how I learned the butchery trade, y'all. I went in and volunteered for free. So if it means to get your reputation out there, to do the things like, you know, somebody like me is never going to be on Joe Rogan, okay? More than likely. You know why? Because especially with the work that I'm doing right now, cleaning up these environments, the powers that shouldn't be don't want that information out there. In fact, a lot of people are reluctant to believe that it can be done. Well, that's why we're working on establishing the proof right now and then proving that we did it in record time, which is unheard of. So this is what you have to do. If you have a technique that, you know, the mainstream is never going to approve of, then that's how you got to do it. You got to make these little handshake deals from time to time. And that's how, you know, I bought property that way. So that's how we roll, son. We got another one from Denise here. That you mind reading that?
Yeah. U.S. is banning meat from south of the border due to screw worm. Raising your own meat is critical, or purchasing from regenerative farmers near us. Wanted to give a heads up. All right. So yeah, make a relationship with your local farmers. That's yeah. I mean, that which is good advice anyway.
Yeah. Wow. I knew Steve. Well, here's another one. Steve Hall, he's a friend of mine, says, "Billy, you're right about Jack Cruz. I'm hooked. He's incredible." I kind of figured I knew that Steve, especially, that if anybody checked this guy out, now he's going to say some things that you may not buy or believe or whatever, but honestly, I still think his conclusions are correct. So if you go out there and check it out, folks, my goodness, it will blow your absolute head clean off when you listen to what he's dropping here and how your government is behind every single bit of it. So it's like, you know, going back to that thing about the screw worms. Okay. Well, is that legit? I mean, who did it come from? Did it come from the mainstream media? Did it come from the government? If it came from the government, you know, you got to ask questions at the very least. I'm not saying it's not accurate. I'm just saying you just got to ask questions. Yeah. But it's been serving me quite well for quite a while to do the very opposite of everything they tell me. All right. With that said, y'all, we're going to go tell you Redemption Shield. They got 10% off with promo code permanent. Like I was mentioned a moment ago, when I'm in a studio like this, number one, as per Jack Cruz, I got my blue light blockers on. Son, you need to get you a pair of these. Yeah. So I got my blue light blockers and I'm also G'd up from the feet up, and that means grounded. So my bare feet right now, don't believe me? Okay. Look at the screen. Yep, that was a bare foot. And it's on a grounding mat right now, so I'm staying as grounded as I can, because honestly, when you're being bombarded with all this junk around you, you want to make sure you're constantly pulling in electrons to offset it. So Wave Watch. Oh, I'm sorry. 10% off with promo. Man, I'm all over the place, man. Redemption Shield, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Then you got the Wave Watch. Okay, yeah, we gave one away when we had Linda on here, Linda Bambert, a while back. Billy 100 will get you $100 off that watch. And now the one I have is the older model. I like it, and it works perfectly fine, but it's so big that it looks like I'm calling in artillery every time I mess with it. So they got a little sleeker version now that if you want to get that one. So Billy 100 will get $100 off of that one, and I love it. I mean, your mom uses it. I use it. Whenever I do something stupid and throw my back out after doing something stupid, well, that's one of my go-tos for a lot of things, even things like anxiety and stuff like that. WellBots, they got this deal right now with refurbished Anker. I've advertised it a while back, the Anker F3800. They got refurbished ones, and they'll knock another $100 off that thing with 100 Billy. Now, the last one, don't get those confused. This one is 100 Billy for WellBots, refurbished Anker 3800. And
what is that, Dad?
I'm sorry?
What, you want to explain what that is?
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. It's basically a solar generator. It's a 240 volt, which is what you need. If you have a well at your place, folks, that's what everybody keeps forgetting about. They buy 120 volt generators, and you're not thinking about the fact that your well is running almost certainly on 240 in most cases. So you need something that can pull 240, and that one has a punch to it, man. It can absolutely run my well, no problem. And it's a solar generator. It's pretty compact, and it's pretty doggone handy. So, WellBots, they have got it together over there. Boy, that's a really good deal. And then finally, Homesteaders United Jamboree, they got the early bird. I'm not going to be at it. I want to make it very clear. More than likely, I'll be an attendee, but chances are at that time of year, I'm not going to be able to make it. But anyway, Homesteaders United Jamboree, they got another thing coming up. And the early bird tickets, you're going to get $50 off with Billy 50. So go check them out. I'm not sure what's on the schedule out there. I'm kind of tapering. Unless something's very, very close to me, folks, I'm just not going to be able to do it. I'm just up to my eyeballs with doing the work that we're doing right now. It's too doggone critical, too important. And I got to show folks that there is a decentralized way. It doesn't require government. In fact, you think about what we're doing out there at Living Soil Foundation, son. All of it has happened through the people in this audience. How awesome is that? Actually moved. They were the ones that moved the needle. We provided the know-how and the ground, the boots on the ground. And honestly, so many folks out there, even some of the folks that are listening right now, man, they came out to volunteer. In fact, we got another thing coming up on the 18th. That's tentatively, it's right around the corner. So, I mean, what's that going to be, next Sunday? I don't know.
Saturday.
No, I won't be working on those Saturdays. So it's got to be on a Sunday. So anyway,
Friday.
Well, whatever day it is, it'll be the 18th. That's what I'm thinking. Anyway, that's when it's going to unfold. And folks, if you want to be a part of it, I mean, we're going to go to phase two on this thing. So, and now I'm really, really comfortable with the notion that people are going to be there. And, that the area that we have you working in is absolutely positively safe. I mean, according to the scalar testing that we've done so far, which by all accounts seems to be actually more reliable and more accurate and faster, much faster than lab testing. So, so far they mirrored perfectly. Dr. Will's testing, along with the lab testing we had last time, verified the same stuff. And so we're assuming that the same thing's about to happen, but people are going to break our chops if we don't absolutely do it. Thanks, Tim, for the $9.99. Y'all hear anything more about the earthquake in East Tennessee? If I had to guess, they're doing more testing in the dump. Oh, I didn't even think about that. At Oak Ridge, what are y'all's thoughts? It wouldn't shock me one bit. When he says dumps, y'all, he means deep underground military bases. There was Catherine Austin Fitz, and she about broke the internet when she was on with Tucker Carlson. they were talking about these trillions, and I'm talking trillion with a T, trillions, as if as in plural, all this money that has just disappeared from the military budget. And then, of course, we don't even count the money in the black budget. We're talking trillions and trillions and trillions. When she dropped this on Tucker Carlson, it basically shut down. I mean, when I say shut down, I mean, it basically had everybody on X losing their minds, because she dropped this information that all this trillions are, that's what they're being used for, deep underground military bases. This is where they do all this nasty, unbelievable, wicked stuff underground. And yes, it's your government doing it. Never heard about it? Go look it up. Catherine Austin Fitz is her name. Boy, I'm just, it's, a, you know, I can't even remember my own birthday, but boy, I can remember some trivia like nobody's business. Anyway, she about broke the internet with Tucker Carlson talking about that. You know, it wouldn't shock me if they're working on a dumb right under us right now, or maybe this is a precursor to something, to the next calamity they want to create. I don't even know, but I'm going to be prepared for it. I mean, I live by the Boy Scout motto. That's why we say stay alert, stay alive. Son, you have thoughts on it?
Yeah, there's dumbs far closer to you than Oak Ridge. Ones that we've like kind of witnessed during the disaster relief. There were places, communities that were completely cut off from any kind of access. Black SUVs come rolling through there at midnight, and then they go up the mountain, and then the trail just kind of disappears into an area that's cleared of any trees and has vent pipes coming up out of it. If that ain't a dumb, I don't know what it is. Maybe it ain't deep, but, you know, there's, I would say there's far more dumbs than what we're even suspecting, and way more areas than what we're thinking.
I mean, look at the ones you know about. I mean, like, take, for example, Fort Carson. I mean, take NORAD, when I was stationed at Fort Carson, where you were born. I mean, you would hear people talk about planes flying into the side. I mean, that these deep underground military bases were so big that there were reports of planes. They looked like they were going to fly into the side of the mountain. Well, I mean, maybe there's a runway in there. Maybe that, I don't know what's happening exactly, but apparently they have, this is what they call a breakaway civilization. Okay. Richard Dolan coined that term, and I had the great fortune, your mom and I, of meeting him once. Anyway, this is what they call a breakaway civilization, folks. They have technology that is light years beyond, by every account, by the people in the know. They have technology that's probably hundreds of years beyond what you and I know about. Well, when you think about it, that's indistinguishable of magic. When you have technology sufficiently advanced, I can't remember who actually made that quote, but he was a science fiction writer. That, you know, when you have technology that's that far advanced, it appears to magic to just the regular person like us. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on in these deep underground military bases, or dumbs, as they call them. Wouldn't shock me if that was one of it, or wouldn't shock me that maybe there's a precursor, or they're setting us up, or maybe that, who even knows? I mean, at this point, all I know is they have to taper a Ponzi scheme, just like Jack Cruz talks about. Now, they tried it with the jab. And when I say the Ponzi scheme, think about it. All these baby boomers are retiring. They're going to be taking money out of the system. Well, up until recently, we thought it was nearly impossible to taper a Ponzi scheme. Well, think about it. If we're the carbon they want to reduce, that's how you taper a Ponzi scheme. You dig? So that's exactly how you go about it. Now, I have some good news here, but you know what? I'm just going to go through it real quick, because some of these I actually do want to cover. Okay, war on cognition, the coordinated assault on your brain and how to defend yourself against every attack. Okay, I said I was going to go through this quickly, but I don't think so. I'll just name them out real quick. Mike Adams actually wrote a pretty good article here. Chemical environmental toxins, food supply, the big pharma's poisons, obviously the vaccines and psychiatric drugs, 5G, EMFs, and magnetic war, or electromagnetic warfare. Like I was mentioning a moment ago, folks, it's all around you. It's like what we teach in the electric trade. You know what makes electricity so dangerous? It's invisible. Same thing with electromagnetism. In fact, guy right here wrote this book, The Body Electric, Becker. He was like the second doctor to ever be canceled. What is he writing there? And he proved this back in the 60s, that what they were doing, what we were doing as a country, what the military exclusively was doing, was absolutely going to have downstream effects. And we're seeing it right now. We've been seeing it for a long, long time. And we had, because it's invisible, you don't even know it's there 9 times out of 10. So that's why I'm trying to eliminate it as much as I can. And folks, remember, turn your doggone Wi-Fi and your cell phones and your computers, turn them off at night. And better still, even in airplane mode, you'll find out that your phones is still gathering data. Well, the only way it does that is if it's working. So put it in a Faraday cage. And if you don't have one of those, put it in a microwave. Just as good. Just as good. Okay, another one, societal collapse. And then he talks about, look, I was going to go into this a little bit more, but he's talking about solutions. I'd probably have to use the remainder of the show to be able to talk about it. But anyway, that's a, you can check that out at Natural News. A really good article. Texas strikes back. Ken Paxton's $1.375 billion victory over Google exposes tech wars, war on privacy. So the Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton, who should have been the U.S., I mean, if Trump and the boys and the gals over there were thinking about it, they wouldn't have brought in that no-do-nothing Pam Bondi, you know, the one that's on Fox News every night, slinging her hair all the way around and talking about, I mean, she, I get irritated every time I see her talking about all the things that they know about, but not a single arrest. Well, Ken Paxton out of Texas, they should have slated him as the U.S. Attorney General, because honestly, that guy would have probably gotten some things done. So anyway, yeah, so they stuck it to Google. Basically, they're stealing. Remember what Edward Snowden talked about, you know, that the government's doing it? Well, basically, Ken Paxton proved that all these, look, if something is free, you're the product, okay? That's basically what he's telling you in a nutshell. And then finally, oh, shoot, I got a little bit of a technological glitch here. Okay, I guess there ain't going to be no finally, because it ain't popping up. So, okay. Well, so much for that one. No, actually,
somebody did mention that after you started talking about dumbs, that their connection started getting glitchy.
Yeah. Wouldn't shock me none. Okay. So number three is Trump's executive order. This is, yeah, I'm going to call this one good news, even though from as a liberty-minded person, I shouldn't be okay with it, but I'll get over it. Trump executive order targeting big pharma aims to slash drug prices by 80%. Okay, I don't have a problem with that. Stick it to the drug companies, I don't have a problem with that. In a nutshell, what he's basically saying, okay, how is it a drug that we send to Canada that's manufactured right here in the United States of Amnesia, you can go across the border in Canada, get it for $30, go to Mexico, get it for $5, but here in the United States, let's say it's a cancer drug, it's $500. How does that happen? So he's saying, hey, if this is what you're charging these folks overseas, well, why aren't we doing it right here at home? I've been very, very critical of the Trump administration, and I'll continue to be when they screw up. But, you know, I'm going to get over this one, because I know there's a lot of people out there that, I mean, you got a lot of these old folks out there that are flipping coins trying to figure out if they're going to take heart medication or eat cat food. They should not be having, I mean, with all the billions that we've just given away to Israel, for crying out loud. And we got people worried about this, or people going bankrupt because they get some awful diagnosis that was brought about, by the way, if you listen to Jack Cruz, folks, and I'm telling you, you have got to check out his work. You'll find out that all of this, a lot of the health crises that we have going on right now are a direct response of our government, is because of what our government has done when it comes to EMF and all these other things that they know are absolutely catastrophic. Absolutely deleterious to our health, and they do absolutely nothing to fix it. So, but somehow we got billions for warfare, but we don't have anything to help out the granny out there, or the mom whose husband ran off with a go-go dancer. We don't have money to help these folks out, or the veteran on the street. Okay, son, I'm just going to calm down right now, because I'm about to lose it.
Yeah.
All right. So with that said, you know what? I better go. Okay. With that said, I'm going to go right into my man, Eric Sider.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, precipitation, radiation, and wind. It is important to note that precipitation is not only rainfall, but many other elements, such as snowmelt, hail, condensation, dew, and fog. The thing that has the largest effect on precipitation is the removal of forests, which reduces condensation, and more importantly, is something humans can address right now. Through design, sites can harvest and store water as well as conserve it, and that gives the land the capacity to be productive even in drier times. Beyond the utilization of regular precipitation, understanding and preparing for maximum 24-hour events and 100-year floods will help protect designs in the future. Radiation from the sun is the biggest energy input in natural systems, and while it is mostly seen through the photosynthesis of plants, understanding the basics of how light and heat operate is crucial to developing passive energy dwellings and habitats. All life elements are affected by light and heat, and by learning how each typically behaves, designers can heat homes with the sun, aid in plant germination, and prepare for extreme weather events like bitter frosts or serious heat waves. Utilizing different design techniques suited to particular environmental needs can help us make the most of the sun's radiation or at times thwart it. Wind has a profound influence on both light and heat, and designers have the potential of managing it through windbreaks and wind tunnels. Prevailing winds are predictable and can be accounted for. For maximum efficiency, windbreaks should be around 40% permeable and created with multifunctional trees such as nitrogen-fixing legumes. Well-placed breaks can save energy in homes, reduce stress for animals, provide barriers for wildlife, supply forage for domesticated animals, reduce erosion, increase garden yields, and more. 30% of the land can be used for windbreaks without losing productivity. But it is also important to be prepared for larger wind issues such as hurricanes and tornadoes. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider. And if you're in need of permaculture t-shirts or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com. And for those in the Sacramento area, check out my permaculture community group, permaculturefairoaks.org.
That's my dog right there. All right, so this, yep, I got on one of Eric's shirts right now. Folks, if you want some one of those ballin' shirts you always see me wearing in the videos, well, you know where to find them. Go to ericsider.com. All right, so we're going to jump down into it right now. I came up with 10 crops that thrive in a crisis. Now, these obviously, I mean, grow as many perennials as you possibly can. Okay, that's a pretty good start. So, but in other cases, I mean, there's some other things out there that you might want to consider. So some feel free to jump in anytime, but right off the bat.
Yeah. Just so you know, I got a full list. So let me know when you're done and I'll get into my list.
Yeah. So I was going to throw out Jerusalem artichokes or sunchokes. Obviously they're perennial, very prolific, drought tolerant, and you can't kill them. So, I mean, that's a pretty good start right there. They're kind of like the figs, you know. When you get figs in Texas, man, or a lot of other places around here, it'd be a little more troublesome in the mountains. But when you get figs going, man, you can't kill them. So that's a pretty good thing to have out there. Sweet potatoes, okay, they grow in bad soil. Obviously, you can eat the tubers and obviously the greens as well. Speaking of Eric Sider, I mean, he was growing them in his little balcony that when he was doing his YouTube place in Texas, and he would just eat the greens off of them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, high and, you know, vitamin A, extremely resilient, and like I said, they even grow in bad soil, so sweet potatoes are really, really hard to beat. I mean, any tuber like that. Here's one that you've seen me grow a lot on the YouTube channel, and I was using them mostly for, you know, helping out messed up ground, and that's cowpea. Well, it fixes nitrogen, it's heat tolerant, drought proof. That, in fact, that's in the dead of summer in Texas, that's one of the things you can get to come up. So cowpea, and then obviously it's protein rich. It stores very, very well, and it's great in rotations. So some winter squash, you could store it for a long, long time. I mean, we've had some out here, some cucini. I got some kasuzi I got from Ben Holler. That thing lasted over a year. The, what was that other one? Man, they grew them in the mountains. Man, them things are like 40 pounds a piece. I can't think of the name of it, but it kept for a year. And they are incredibly prolific. Not the tastiest thing in the world, but your animals can eat it. You can eat it the whole nine yards. Spinach. Heat tolerant, vining, you know, good in humid regions where a lot of people are listening to us right now. Keeps producing when other greens bolt or, they're not there anymore. Here's another one, and it's not a shameless plug, but honestly, I mean it, because you got to be thinking about your animals too. And everything I've said here, your omnivores could eat as well. You seeing the overlay here, except for, well, especially this one, that's comfrey, obviously. Regenerates the soil, feeds animals, makes killer compost, obviously. And, it's a powerhouse in the crisis system. So even when, let's say, all things went to pot. Now what do you got? Okay, we don't have any minerals for our animals. Well, there's a way you could possibly get around that. Obviously, collard greens. I like some collard greens. I want some pig's feet. Cold hardy, pest resistant, nutrient packed. You know, year round greens with minimal input. Amaranth, ground nuts. I know we're getting kind of long in the tooth, so I'll just kind of, you know, hand it over here to William. And obviously some perennial kale. Your mom grew a lot of that last year, and that's a winner too. Lives for years, resists frost. You know, low maintenance, high value greens. I mean, it's a way to be getting things. I mean, these are some serious crops that thrive in a crisis. All right, son, let me throw it over to you.
Well, the biggest one that stands out to me is mulberry. There's a variety of mulberry that will grow in any climate and will fruit in any climate. So mulberry, no matter where you are, you can look into a mulberry and find one that's going to be fruiting there. If you're in a warmer climate, you can do taro, which is going to be a root crop and everything. Garlic, I mean, you're not going to get many calories out of garlic, but it's easy to grow. Like, you can just plant it and then forget it. But also think about not only the specific species you should think about, but also the techniques you're using to take care of these crops. So, and I keep bringing this example up, but last year I got a cover crop established in the garden. And remember, I'm in Texas, where there's a guaranteed drought, hot, humid drought every single year. I got a cover crop established in the garden and then made sure that was established. And then I planted my sweet potato slips and I watered them in. And that was the last time I took care of them at all. That's the last time I watered them. That's the last time I did anything with them until 120 days later. And it was time to, harvest. Another one is purslane. I see that weed. A lot of people view it as a weed. I see that grown everywhere. Some people, like where you live, Dad, call it pusley, which just flat out sounds disgusting. But purslane is another one that you can use. Where's my list? Pecans, like perennials, obviously, but pecans, that's going to also add a fat quotient to it as well, because nut trees have fat. And any kind of nut tree that grows well in your area, I would focus on growing, just because that's going to give you additional fat and you're getting 9 calories per gram on fat. And then yarrow and lamb's quarters, those are both weeds that you see growing everywhere. In fact, the friend's house that I was at yesterday, his 12-year-old daughter like kept pulling up yarrow flowers and was like, hey, here's yarrow. Here's some more yarrow. Here's some more yarrow. Some of this stuff you might not even have to plant, and you can just kind of like recognize it as it's naturally growing and then just go harvest it. Also ground cherries, that's a good one. Like, mostly your perennials are going to be the best ones for times of crisis. And remember, yield is determined by like the calories put in, your calories taken out minus the calories you put in. So you might get better yields if you spend more calories on that system. Like, you might get better like harvest at the end, the more calories you spend on the system, but your yield will be higher if you can get away with the minimum amount of calories you can put into a system. So yeah, that's what I got.
Yeah. I like Amy also, man, I can't believe I forgot the nuts in there. I got ground nuts and stuff in here, but honestly, that's one. I'm glad you pointed that out, son, just from a preparedness quotient. Is the hardest thing, folks, think about this. The hardest thing to find in nature is fat. That is the hardest thing to find. And carbs and protein give you 4 calories per gram. And like William said, you get 9 calories per gram from fat. So in a vine, folks, I've talked about shelf-stable fat before, but if you can grow it on the vine out there, through your nuts is going to be the primary way you're going to do it in most places. I mean, you're going to want that. I mean, walnuts, I mean, pecans. I mean, I don't care what that nut is. I guarantee there's at least a little bit of fat in there. Makes a lot of it. Well, it's not like we're growing macadamias here. I mean, that would be your highest, as I understand it. But, you know, outside of getting it from an animal, and good luck getting a whole lot of fat off a deer or a squirrel or any other wild game out there. In most cases, you're not getting any fat on those guys. So you got to be thinking about those things as well. So, and there was a lot of great things I tried to put up in the chat here. So, I mean, this
there was another one I forgot about. Especially if you're in Texas, this is a crop that everybody grows, but nobody really eats because it makes the garden look good. And that's okra. Okra is one of those things that you can plant it and then you can just leave it alone and it's going to do fantastic every single time. It's just funny that everybody around here grows it only to make their garden look good. Most people just give away as much okra as they can and they don't actually eat it. And the people they give it to are like, crap, what do I do with all this okra?
Man, give it to me. I mean, man, there's nothing I love eating more. I mean, I don't understand why. Let's say you go to a sandwich shop and they give you a pickle. I can't stand most pickles. I mean, especially if they're the Vlasic kind of pickles or whatever. Homemade pickles I like. But honestly, my favorite thing, I can eat an entire jar of pickled okra any day of the week. I mean, the snap of it, everything. Now, boiled okra, all right, you got another thing coming right there. Now, if it's in a gumbo or something like that, I can do it. But yeah, son, things like okra, good night, man. It's so doggone prolific. Even when they get a little too big, I mean, yeah, they can be a little troublesome then. But honestly, with that okra, good night, man. You talk about something you can absolutely pickle. Here's another one. Diana J says, man, this is a good one. Avocados, yeah. Coconuts, hazelnuts, pecans, olives. Obviously, we're not going to be able to grow all these in everywhere. But sunflowers, that's another good one. Pumpkin seeds. Yep, all those seeds high in natural oil. And it's oil. It's not the seed oil that you get from the doggone store, y'all. These are oils that are coming straight from the seed. You dig? So, hot pickled okra. Oh, man, don't even get me started. Man, I'm going to go all sideways on this thing.
My mouth is watering.
Yeah, I love some pickled okra, man. I'm serious, man. Got to make sure I tell your mom to make sure we got some okra out there because I am all about some pickled doggone okra. And she loves it, too. So I'll take those any day over your typical, I don't know why sandwich shops ain't giving away pickled okra instead of pickles. I mean, they're so much better. I roast okra with tomatoes, peppers, and onions. Man, that sounds like a winner as well. So, look, folks, I'm sure that if, you know, just putting our head, we just threw out some ideas there. These are things that are easy to grow. Obviously, some of the things we covered in the early part of this program, think about those perennial. This is, everybody always asks, why do you go on so much about apples? Okay, number one, they're apples. They're great. I love them. They bring me back to when I was on my first ever field trip, and it was to an orchard in Amish country in Pennsylvania. But in addition to that, apples are, first of all, one of those things that go well with savory and sweet. It's one of those rare things that go well with either one. And then honestly, I was just eating the last of the Evercrisps, I would say about a month ago, maybe not even that long ago. I ate that last of the Evercrisp that I had that were picked back in October last year. I mean, folks, they keep for a long, long time, especially if you store them in the right conditions. So, which also tells me, okay, I need more Evercrisp next time. So, but I got a lot of them growing out here as well. But the point being is that there are so many awesome options out there and things that keep well. And things that are just plain so much better to eat when you grow them yourself. So, son, anything to add?
Yeah, I want to clarify, y'all. I love okra. I'm just saying that's what the neighbors talk about is like, dang, what do I do with all this okra? And most of the people around here, unless they're frying it, they don't really eat it. But, yeah, I love okra, especially pickled okra. I can eat easily an entire jar of pickled okra and still want more. But other than that, that's really all I got. Just focus on like techniques that you're using and then try to do as many perennials as possible because that's going to be way less energy you put in for what you're getting in return.
Well, I want to thank everybody in the chat. I want to give another hat tip to Renewed Homestead. Go check them out on YouTube, y'all. And I want to thank everybody for being in here tonight. It's been a real joy to hang out with you. Until next time, stay alert.
Stay alive.
The knowledge rings with roots that run deep. Wisdom from Saul and permaculture dreams. Let the ideas unfold. I'm grooving with the truth. Feeling nature's food. We've got the answers. All we need to do. Listen to the earth. They got us through.
Let's see the shame. What the world's been from the smallest frown. The harmony begin in the cycle of life. For the magic's alive. Tune it to the beat. Feel the vibe and thrive.